You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, happy holidays. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You've heard a lot of stories this year of trauma and peril and people in deep distress. But if you regularly listen or you subscribe to the GLA podcast, you've also heard quite a few morsels of hope along the way. People stepping up to the plate in their own unique ways to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, how do you help? All I need is my brother.
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Today, a special episode of Greater LA, where you hear from a few of the helpers featured on the show over the past year. Folks who've really worked hard to make sure others felt cared for and seen. And we're checking in now to see how they're doing as the year draws to a close. Dr. Mina Syed, an endocrine surgeon in Santa Monica and founder of Wellness Worldwide, a humanitarian aid organization serving vulnerable communities abroad and providing medical care where there is none. We spoke back in September. Dr. Syed, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure and honor. Shirley Raines, founder of Beauty to the Streets, a nonprofit that provides unhoused people in LA with everything from beauty services to hygiene products. We last spoke with Shirley back in September as well. Shirley, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me back.
And Sue Mancini owns Sad Girl Creamery, which is an ice cream pop-up that she runs out of her apartment in K-Town. She broaches sensitive topics surrounding mental health and self-care. We met Sue back in April. Sue, welcome back to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
I want to thank you all for coming on and especially sharing your stories with us on the holiday season. I want to start with you, Sue, because Sad Girl Creamery is the newest of the three that we're talking about. Just briefly remind us of how you bring ice cream, you know, those frozen treats and mental health awareness together.
So most of it is done through social media. On my Instagram, I share a lot of personal stories of my own journey through my mental health and then things that I've learned about reading about mental health and try to share that information with other people on that platform. And then people come and buy ice cream from me and and like to talk to me about things that they're going through or things that they relate to with me and, you know, and share a little sweet bite.
A little sweet bite. And you've been doing it. Again, we met you back in April, and I wonder if, you know, what has changed in the months since then? We thought, and if I'm, you know, going back in the time machine to April, I'm thinking, all right, that was the time I got my second vaccine shot in April. And I was thinking a little more, you know, hopeful. We thought that the pandemic was easing up. Obviously, Delta had other plans for us. Now we're perhaps in a surge with Omicron. So I wonder, you know, how are things going with you right now?
Things have been going okay. It definitely has been difficult having in-person pop-ups now outside and, you know, keeping things clean. But I continue to share things with my folks online and trying to help other people, and especially in the Latinx community. I think I agree with you. People are still like on high alerts and slowly trying to get comfortable again, but it's hard. So
it's hard, and people are vaccinated, and we're hoping that those vaccinations can help. Shirley, I'll bring you in. Or should I call you CNN's Hero of the Year, by the way, which also transpired since we last spoke to you. Congratulations on being dubbed the Hero of the Year.
Thank you. That was such an honor for our nonprofit and our community.
You had quite an emotional reaction too when your win was announced. I mean, you talked a bit about how broken people are still very much useful, which, you know, that brings a tear to my eye as well when you think about, you know, the least of these and people like you who do so much work toward helping them. Can you say more about what that means to you?
You know, I think that even in my position to stand up there and get this honor as Hero of the Year, you know, like I've been very transparent about my mental health. I'm on Prozac. You know, I am so much broken, but the world would have you think in order to be a hero or in order to, you know, find your purpose and your passion, you have to be healed. And that's not true. And that's what I try to talk to my community about. You know, as broken as you are, you're still very much useful. You're still very much valuable. I think the thing with broken people is we're just a little more rough around the edges. You know, we'll cut you a little more, but that's just because of the sharp edges. But, you know, I think there are a lot of sharp edges in Skid Row and in the streets. And a lot of people don't see that. They don't mean to cut you, honey. They just can't help it. They're sharp. You know, we got to buff them out. And that's what I think our work is about, buffing them out, making them not feel alone and seen.
Wow.
Shirley, I think you are absolutely right, but I think broken people are especially useful because I think all of us have some kind of connection to the trauma personally of the people and the communities you serve, and we are uniquely able to help them more because of it. And so I really think all of our populations are people that are not seen, are dehumanized in a lot of ways. And because we identify with them, but still we are successful in our own lives, we're kind of the link. And I think that's what I see in the three of us.
Dr. Syed, you're doing work in Afghanistan. Your humanitarian organization, Wellness Worldwide, works to deliver care to critically ill children there. The last time we talked, the Taliban was seizing power in the country. You know, Americans were evacuating Afghanistan. Now we're four months in at least, the vast majority of Americans are out. How have your efforts been affected by all of that?
Oh, they've been affected immensely. Initially, our focus was on complex medical aid for children and also basic medical care for a population of 35,000 internally displaced people in a refugee camp. But now we've had to put a lot of effort into food aid. So now 1 million children will die if the current humanitarian crisis is not reversed immediately, and 22 million people will starve, 13 million of them, which are children.
Those are shocking numbers.
80% of the population are women and children. And what I think the world consciousness sometimes doesn't realize is that the Taliban are 80,000 people, and the Afghan population is 38 million. So this humanitarian catastrophe is unfolding. I see it unfolding every night. It's getting worse. We're getting more desperate calls for help. These calls were coming in since the end of August, but now there's a lot more asking for food aid. And in terms of the malnutrition with children, back in September, we saw death and sickness mostly in the hospitals. Now the malnourished children are on the streets, and my team can take pictures of them kind of sitting on the streets, very emaciated. And now the UN is saying that there's going to be 97% poverty of the population very soon. That's the highest ever recorded in history of any population.
Of any population?
Yes.
97% poverty?
Yes.
And, you know, you're just one organization with some people on the ground, right, in Afghanistan trying to help. How do you do it? Well, I mean, that sounds like a Herculean effort to try and get money and people to help.
As a credit to my profession, I think surgeons put in Herculean efforts every day. I think I've taken some of those qualities, and I have an idea that I have a specific skill set. And my work in Afghanistan dates back 20 years. So I have specific framework and support on the ground that I could use. So I'm pulling those two together and doing what I can do. I don't want to look 20 years in the future and see that this kind of largest humanitarian catastrophe on the planet was occurring and I didn't do all I could do to help them. For Afghanistan, America was there for 22 years and spent $2 trillion. So there's a lot of involvement and there's still a lot of involvement. So it's really not that far. Like I said, it's just a text away. And it's not an Afghan problem, really. It's a human problem. And that's what we really, I think the three of us for sure, and perhaps Steve too, I think the three of us really understand that at our core. But I think it takes some experiences and time to really understand that and exercise it, that it's not a homeless, you know, largely black population. It's not just a Latinx mental health population. It's not an Afghan poverty population. It's a human experience. And each of us has different abilities to help. And I think that that's what's lacking.
That, of course, is happening in Afghanistan. We see enough of a catastrophe, or at least certainly a lot of suffering on the streets of Los Angeles. Shirley Raines, public opinion in L.A. seems to be shifting when it comes to the homeless. City Councilman Joe Buscaino is running for mayor. Part of his platform is getting the homeless off the streets fast by making it illegal to camp or to sleep on sidewalks. What do you say to the average Angeleno who's angry about the encampments, right, having to see them and want them gone? Or maybe the average Angeleno who's just heartbroken about the suffering and they want some kind of faster solution. Is it happening fast enough? Is there a solution within sight?
You know, I don't think it's happening fast enough. I think that, you know, it once upon a time was a little wound, and now we have a gangrene situation. You know, I think that we have to work together the same way we did with this pandemic. You know, what affects the community of Skid Row, Los Angeles, affects all of us globally, worldwide. You know, I just heard the young queen talking about, you know, the death rates and starvation and hunger. And here we are, you know, 40 minutes away from where some of the you know, the famous people live. And you've got people sleeping on the ground. I don't think it's happening fast enough. I also don't think that there is a clear solution right now. I don't think there is a clear solution that we can get to right now. But I think that we have to put more efforts into making sure that people are alive and have the basic necessities. I know housing is the ultimate goal, but people pay money all the time to go camping and sleep outside, and kids find it enjoyable. They find it enjoyable because they have all the basic needs. We need to provide those for people on the streets. And I think the house community needs to understand that this pandemic should have showed you there is no security for you. We have natural disasters happening where people are losing their housing. You know, there's just no guarantee that your support system will always be there. So we need to have some sense of compassion and understand this pandemic of homelessness is the same as the COVID pandemic. It makes no sense who it affects, but it can affect us all.
Sue, the holidays can be a pretty tough time for people suffering from depression and other mental health issues. When you look at 2021 and everyone's like, well, what are you grateful for? What positive things have happened? But then some folks are like, well, this is a really crappy year. You know, there's not a whole lot that I can point to. I mean, how do you keep that hopefulness when there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of it?
Well, for me, I like to do goal spreadsheets.
Really? Spreadsheets?
Yeah.
I love it.
I know. It sounds cheesy. Or like you can also do journaling, but I would write down things that I felt I was courageous about this year, the goals that I was able to achieve through being courageous this year. And it doesn't have to be anything huge, but it's important to reflect on the small things that you achieved and not put such a heavy emphasis on like, oh, I could have done more this year, because everyone feels the same way right now.
Dr. Syed, when you think about the work that you're doing and trying to help, it can, I imagine, can feel pretty helpless in that you have such an amazingly large situation. Extraordinarily large. I mean, when you're talking about 97% poverty, perhaps, in Afghanistan, how do you unwind? How do you, I mean, I get it. It's really difficult to detach from, but you've also got to keep your mental capacity, right? Your capabilities. How do you do it? You don't have a spreadsheet, I would imagine.
No, I don't have a spreadsheet, but I have an extraordinary family, and it's a large extended family and a lot of friends. A lot of Netflix and HBO.
Huh.
And I do spend a lot of time with family and friends, at least, you know, a couple times a week. And like you said, you could feel helpless. And sometimes we feel very much alone because we're the only organization that so many people are reaching out to. But one of the most touching things and the most inspiring things is actually when you kind of see on GoFundMe, or we get an email from a college student who, you know, gave $30, and you know the college students don't have that much, and then they put a little note of support.
Right.
And that really, really helps. That's something that I didn't expect would feel so great. Obviously, helping the kids and trying to feed the people, there's a certain fulfillment of that. But kind of being the vector for compassion for other people, that actually really helps ground me as well.
I mean, as far as boundaries go, you know, because you're trying to do all this work, but at the same time, you obviously have your own things that you need to worry about, your own world. You're also a surgeon. So you do have to keep it within the parameters, right?
Yes and no. I think as surgeons, we're very used to kind of living kind of on the edge in terms of stress and challenges sometimes, and we have certain mechanisms to cope. But Steve, this is not a normal time. This is the largest humanitarian catastrophe on the planet. Never in my life have I experienced a preventable, something that can be fixed, where 1 million children are going to die. So if I do have stress and I'm working hard, I think that's appropriate given the time we have. This is the time that it's natural and normal to be stressed. And as long as you have coping mechanisms, I mean, it's appropriate to be stressed.
As long as you have the coping mechanisms, though. That's the important part, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Shirley, you know, your CNN Hero of the Year acceptance speech, you said, "I am a mother without a son, and there are a lot of people in the street who are without a mother." And you said, quote, "I feel like it's a fair exchange. I'm here for them." Does this maternal approach ever make it difficult to separate yourself from your work, so you make sure you have time for taking care of yourself?
Yeah, you know, I think the reason I'm so passionate about this work is because this work is me taking care of me. You know, I've spent my whole life focused on me. You know, life was only about me. And, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people out there that are hopeless and think that things won't get better. And, you know, it doesn't look like things are going to get better. And certainly in the world we're living in, it doesn't look like things are going to get better. But I certainly didn't think 30 years after burying a child, 30 plus years, I'd be standing on a stage accepting a CNN award. You know what I mean? So I feel like I am your future. People are like, I wish I knew what my future looked like. Your future's probably going to be really, really bright. You know, I feel like I'm the good news. So it helps my spirit to go out there and help people who feel like this is the end for them. And I'm like, you know what? I felt that as well. You know, I felt that as well, but it's not. And so that's a lot of me taking care of myself by sharing my pain with them, because before I would sit in my house, you know, filled with anxiety and, you know, all this pain I had inside. I'll never lose the pain of burying my son and his father, but helping other people actually helps me. It really does.
Helping other people. Mm-hmm. Sue, if you're selling the ice cream, right, at the Sad Girl Creamery, how do you advise Shirley to, you know, kind of keep it going and keep being positive and hopeful when what you see in front of you is kind of dour and less than optimistic?
I mean, I definitely agree with the idea of setting boundaries, because it's very easy to get caught up in the heaviness of all of it. What Shirley is dealing with is so heavy, it is hard to ignore these people who are in need on the street every day, especially, you know, in Los Angeles, where it's like an enormous problem. But taking time for yourself is very important whenever you're dealing with, you know, carrying all this weight on your shoulders and having a sense of like being able to take a deep breath.
Right. Shirley, if you were to go over there and talk to Sue about what she's doing and all of the people who she's talking to, how would you tell her to give out the advice, you know, as far as people who seem to have a lot on their plate?
I think that, you know, listening is the best thing we can do, because I think that, you know, we kind of, especially when it comes to supporting and helping people, I think we always want to try to find the right thing to say. And I think like sometimes they don't want to hear the right thing. Maybe they just need to talk. And that's a form of healing themselves. So, you know, I can see while she's scooping ice cream and not overthinking the fact that you have to have the right answer, just knowing that you can just listen and people feel cleansed, you know, then you realize you haven't gotten two words in. They just needed to get it off their chest. I think that's a great way of getting ice cream and just having someone that can listen to them. I think we do that to a lot of people in the industries. We find ourselves talking to people while they're loading our bags. And I think that's an amazing. Who doesn't love ice cream and advice? Come on now.
Yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. And Dr. Syed, you act, and this is, I think, what's so interesting about having you three on the program today, because you act internationally in Afghanistan. Shirley, you act locally. Sue, you act virtually for the most part, right? Through your social media platform. So the world seems to be reopening. Again, we don't know what the future holds as far as Omicron goes, but have any of you noticed some odd benefits. I'll start with you, Dr. Syed. Odd benefits to pandemic barriers, or maybe lessons that the pandemic taught you that you may carry into the future with regard to what you're doing.
Well, you know, before the pandemic started, I was doing all of the work remotely, and I would try to explain to other people how it worked, but they really didn't get it. But now that the pandemic has happened and everybody does remote work, there's finally kind of a connection and an understanding that you can get a lot done remotely. And I think that when other people see that, I'm hoping that more work can be done from your bedroom internationally to serve people all over, because it's very doable. Our world is very connected. And these children dying of malnutrition and the children with cancer are simply a text or a phone call from me away.
Sue, same question to you. We talk about the pandemic, that you're virtual for the most part through your social media platform. I mean, what did the pandemic teach you, do you think? And what kind of lessons have you learned going forward?
Well, I don't know if this is like slightly off topic, but a lot of people in the food industry, I think, took a step back and realized like, hey, I could be doing something for myself and not working these long hours or being underpaid. The bright side of it is I've seen a lot of people in my community go ahead and start their own thing. I don't know, it's been very beautiful to see it flourish. And for me, that kind of inspired me to finally step away and do my own thing with the ice cream and be interconnected with those people on the internet and people who follow them and love food and sharing personal stories about like dealing with our mental health. There are a lot of people who go into the food industry because of like dealing with their depression or anxiety in a tactile way. What I've learned is it kind of took a semi-positive role on people being able to hold for themselves and like do something that'll make them happy instead of like working these long hours at a restaurant.
Shirley, before we wrap things up, was there one interaction on the streets where you were doing your work, you know, near the Skid Row area and pretty much in a lot of places where there are unhoused, where you can pinpoint from this past year that, you know, that the work you do is worth it, that the work you do makes a difference in people's lives? What was it? Was there an example? Are there many examples?
You know, there are many examples. I think the work we do is pivotal, especially during the pandemic. You know, when everybody else, you know, was told to self-isolate and stay in their house, we realized that what we knew was there was a whole community of people that were living on the streets that didn't have the ability to self-isolate like we did. You know, so we quickly went into action and went out there and just seeing all those people that needed the help, being able to help the people in the community, you know, during such a time as this, it was pivotal in our work, and just seeing the way people responded was eye opening. I think everybody thought about the community. So when we look out there, it's not just one story. It's just watching them all survive a pandemic. You know, they were scared, they were vulnerable. You know, nobody cared about them, and just watching their strength. You know, I can't pinpoint one story when there's just so many strong people that are living on those streets.
Well, you all three are inspirations to all of us. And I want to thank you for not only being here, but for the work that you all do. It's so admirable. Shirley Raines, founder of Beauty to the Streets. Dr. Mina Syed, an endocrine surgeon in Santa Monica, founder of Wellness Worldwide with her work in Afghanistan. And Sue Mancini, owner of Sad Girl Creamery. Thanks to you all. Happy holidays to you all, and God bless you.
Yeah, thank you. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Well, that's going to do it for us on this holiday episode of Greater LA. Tomorrow, another special episode looking at the history of some of LA's iconic streets. All right, one iconic street anyway, PCH, Pacific Coast Highway. For years after LA was a car town, you couldn't drive north through Malibu. It is a fascinating story. You'll hear it tomorrow. And what about Biddy Mason, an important name in LA history that doesn't have a street named after her? Why? And who's trying to change that? We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast while you're there. Get every episode of GLA delivered fresh to your feed. Share your thoughts with us, too, about your street in LA, perhaps, or something that you want to hear on our show. kcrw.com/GLA. Greater LA is Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Jackie Sedley, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Phil Richards, and Christian Bordahl. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears and time. Happy holidays.